This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Tonight on Mind Matters, we're talking about adult autism. It's a subject that's gained more attention lately. And after our interview last week with Rosie O'Donnell, who revealed that her own daughter, Clay, also has been diagnosed with autism, it's getting a lot of discussion. And for many adults, understanding autism brings relief, clarity, and a whole new sense of identity. But it can also raise some big questions about what it means to live and thrive differently in a world built for neurotypicals. Now, psychologist Anthony Smith joins us again for Mind Matters. Anthony, good to see you again.
You too, Warren. Thank you for having me back.
Now, what is autism and how might it show up in adults who were never diagnosed as kids?
So autism is what we as psychologists might term a neurodevelopmental difference, meaning it's something that people are born with and it affects the way they communicate, process information, and experience the world. And when we think about adults, we often see autism showing up in more subtle ways. For example, adults might describe feeling socially exhausted, needing routines to manage daily life, or having deep, focused interests that give them a sense of calm or purpose. And autism isn't something that suddenly appears in adulthood. It's just that for many people, it's only recognized later in life, often after years of wondering why social or sensory experiences might feel different.
What are some of the, I suppose, the signs or features that might lead to an adult considering getting an autism assessment?
Yeah, so as psychologists, we're really looking at three main areas of difference. So these might be differences in the way that language and the way that people communicate, differences in sensory use, and maybe differences in social and emotional relationships. And we can think of these as differences, but we can also think of these as differences in brain style or just a different way that people's brains might be wired. So when it comes to adults, particular things people might see, it might be difficulties picking up on social cues, a need for clear communication, things like finding small talk difficult or draining. They might have different sensory sensitivities, so maybe bright lights or background noise might feel really overwhelming for people. I think it's important to kind of recognize that these traits aren't problems, they're simply part of how a person experiences and navigates the world. The difficulties arise because our neurotypical environment isn't set up to support neurodiversity.
So we're set up to support one, I suppose, type of brain wiring, but not others. And we we imply that that's normal, but it's not. We're all normal, just as different types.
I like to kind of think of it as almost like a different operating system that might be kind of installed in people's brains. And if we think from an evolutionary perspective, these kinds of differences would have been really helpful for us as a developing species to have someone with particular skills and unique interest really would have helped the kind of developing collective. It's just in this modern world, the environment hasn't quite caught up to those different brain styles.
If someone suspects they might be autistic, what actually happens during an adult autism assessment?
Yeah, so as a psychologist, I'd really start with a comprehensive interview, really wanting to explore someone's developmental history, their experiences, their strengths, and their challenges. And recently, we've got some really good tools that we might use as psychologists to guide that assessment, that it's very strength-based and often sensory-focused. And that can help to also rule out any underlying conditions or other co-occurring conditions, which are really common in autistic adults too.
Now, the term masking up comes up a lot in conversations about autism. What does masking mean how does it affect adults day to day?
Yeah, so masking is a clinical term, but it's also a term that often comes up recently in the media. And that's when an autistic person might hide or suppress their natural traits to fit in socially. So it might involve things like forcing eye contact, mimicking others' tones or expressions, or pretending to be comfortable in environments that actually feel quite overwhelming. And we know that from kind of some recent research, for many adults, particularly women or gender diverse people, these masking or camouflaging traits might be quite prominent. They can also lead to what we call autistic burnout, which is a kind of emotional and physical exhaustion that comes from years of trying to meet neurotypical expectations through masking or camouflaging some people's natural traits.
We're chatting with psychologist Anthony Smith on Mind Matters, looking at adult autism, what it looks like, how it's assessed, and why awareness matters at any age. Anthony, how can therapy or psychological support help adults who are on the autism spectrum?
Yeah, so for me, I always like to kind of practice in a neuroaffirming way. And that means focusing and understanding and accepting neurodiversity rather than trying to fix it. And so therapeutically speaking, as psychologists, our role might involve helping people build connections to manage anxiety or some of the sensory stresses or experiences they might have, maybe to navigate relationships at work more confidently. I might support clients to request reasonable adjustments in maybe their workplaces to create more predictable routines or maybe sensory environments that better meet their preferences. And I think encouraging connection is really important too. Finding other autistic or neurodivergent adults can be really life-changing. It helps people feel understood, seen, and less alone. So they might be, I guess, some broad goals of psychological support and therapy.
What kinds of challenges, Anthony, or emotions do people often face after getting a late diagnosis? And what's a good way to work through that if you do get a late diagnosis?
Yeah, in my clinical experience, Warren, it's actually some quite positive emotions. So often it's feelings of relief. Often it's a missing piece of the puzzle that finally fits, that helps them understand how they've navigated the world. Often huge relief is what people express because it's a way of understanding themselves with compassion rather than criticism or blame, which may have happened without that understanding.
Got a message in saying late diagnosis is very gendered. Boomer, Gen X and elder millennial women were entirely missed. Also note that neurodivergent folks are highly more likely, approximately 6 times more, to identify as part of the queer community.
Possibly, yeah. There's definitely some strong evidence around those masking traits that I was talking about before and how that might impact, I guess, diagnosis of people that identify as women or gender diverse people. People might be more prone to engaging in some of those masking behaviours, which makes picking up some of these more subtle traits of autism a little more challenging.
Now, are there any myths or misunderstandings about adult autism that we should finally, let's let go of them here on Joy Drive? Let's knock them on the head, Anthony.
Yeah, I think some kind of recent ones that have come up in the media, and this often comes up, is some of the causes of autism, particularly around vaccines.
Okay.
And some political rhetoric that has been going on lately around that. And I want to be absolutely clear, as a health professional, there's no credible scientific evidence linking vaccines to autism. This idea came from a single, now very much discredited study in the late 90s, which was found to be fraudulent and not particularly scientifically sound, and I believe retracted by the authors. Since then, we've done numerous studies that have found across millions of people that there's no connection between vaccines and autism. The best evidence that we have is there's probably a strong genetic link that explains why people might experience this.
The thing I hate about these myths that are being sort of propagated is it almost implies that someone's done something wrong.
Yes.
And the result is someone with autism. Yet there's
Yes.
nothing wrong with someone with autism.
There's no one
natural.
To blame.
No
one. Yeah, you're exactly right. There's this blame narrative that happens. And I've seen this also in some of my kind of clients and their parents, particularly given recent media suggestion of this, that they are to blame. And nothing could be further from the truth. This isn't caused by anything that anyone does or any kind of parenting practices. The best evidence we have is it's genetic. And as I said before, there would be some really kind of good, helpful traits that people with autism would bring to our species as we were growing and developing.
I love how some of the major supermarkets have sort of a quiet hour where there's less lighting and that music is turned off. I must admit, it's so pleasant shopping. Yeah,
it's really nice seeing that coming across all sorts of different areas. So my bouldering gym even has kind of a sensory hour too.
Which is great.
Similar kind of sports. So really great to see those kind of adaptions within the neurotypical world.
For parents who realise they might share some of the same traits as their child, I suppose, what's your advice for taking the next step?
Yeah, so I think speaking to a health professional, being a GP or perhaps a psychologist or someone with some mental health training would be really appropriate. There's a lot of information and tests that are available on the internet of varying kind of quality and validity. So the best thing to do would be to speak to a health professional to see what options might be available to answer some of those questions.
Anthony, always good to chat with you on Mind Matters. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Warren. See you next time.
Thank you. That was psychologist Anthony Smith.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.